Daf, Daf Mem Zayin. And we're up to the fourth line. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So we're continuing now the sugya of the people who do not have a chazaka. Comes along Rabbi Yochanan to say that there's going to be also an interrelationship, obviously, between the people who don't have a chazaka and those who are coming, machmat those people, because even though normally we would say taninan liyoresh or taninan lelokeach, we can't very well be taninan, something which if the guy himself had been taninan, it wouldn't have meant anything to us, so that complicates matters. Therefore, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oban in lo chazaka. Just as we say that, the Oman, we said he doesn't have a chazaka, but that doesn't mean that the ben Oman, so that the son of the dry cleaner, he too wouldn't have a chazaka. Yesh lo chazaka. The son of the Oman does have a chazaka. Now, this is not clear. In other words, are we talking about where the son inherited the father? How could he have more of a chazaka than the father himself would have had, even without the taina? So we're going to have to explain what that means. Oris, in lo chazaka, we also said that a sharecropper, we said yesterday, does not have a chazaka. And I was referring to an oris, the Bati Avot. But the ben of the Ariz does have a chazaka. A gazlan does not have a chazaka. But here, neither does the ben a gazlan have a chazaka. This makes it even more complicated, because then what in the world, I mean, either taninan or not taninan, we certainly can't say that the father defines the son. I mean, well, why in the world would there be a difference between them? So the ben of the gazlan ain't lam chazaka, but the grandson does have a chazaka. So ben benar shel gazlan yesh lo chazaka. And of course, the Gemara is concerned with the illogic of this entire preposition of Reb Yochanan. And so we ask, Kechidami, what exactly are we referring to? What's the case? Ida atu b'ta'anata. I mean, did the children come now with the ta'ana of Avuhon? So in other words, they're saying, look, I mean, we don't know. Basically, we're coming because we inherited this from the father, and we assumed that the father owned it. And so then none of them should have a chazaka, because if the father doesn't have a chazaka, they can't have a stronger chazaka. Even with the ta'aninan, we say ta'aninan liyoresh, so we will say something for the yoresh, even though he doesn't know. So we'll say for the yoresh what the father could have said, but over here the father himself couldn't have said. And what's he going to say? I bought it. We say, you don't have a chazaka because you're an Oman, you're an Aris, we know what you were doing there. So even if we would be ta'aninan, we certainly can't pluck something out of nowhere and being ta'aninan for him. So that doesn't mean then even the ones that we're claiming here do have a chazaka because they're their children. How would they have a chazaka? If they are not coming over here with their taina of the father, they have their own business. What do you care who my father was? I bought this. So then obviously what's the difference if his father's a gazlan or not? So even with a ben gazlan, it doesn't mean just because your father's a gazlan we're going to say that we don't believe that you bought something. So then afilu ben gazlan, we're talking about the ben of the gazlan. So then it should be exactly the same thing too. So Nami lo should not be a problem with him either. Says the Nami san should not be a problem either. Answers the Gemara, obviously we're going to have to define the case. The case will have to be lo tzricha, that we have witnesses. The Gamri edim. Bifaneinu hodelo, that we have witnesses that this new machzik is bringing, that say that we were present when the person now was bringing suit and claiming that it's his, was actually moda to the individual who himself would not have had a chazaka, but turns out that he admitted that, yes, it's true, you bought it from me. So in that case, we will give it over to the child. So now how does that differ? If the father is a ganav or the father is an aris, what's the difference? If we have the hodah, it should make no difference whatsoever. So hanach, the other cases of a ben oman and a ben aris, over there, ikalameima kushta ka'amre. There we could say that what he's saying is the truth. But in this case, where he's the ben of the gazlan, there afagav the odi nami lomehem. There, even though we have witnesses that we believe to say that the person bringing suit was moda, that he had actually been paid by the purchaser, namely the gazlan, we don't believe his statement. We believe the ain, but we don't give any validity to his statement as a hoda'at baldin. Why? Keder of Kahana. The Omer of Kahana. Rav Kahana says, in a situation where it's clear that people are being pressured into an admission, the admission doesn't mean anything. Because he ilav the odil, if he hadn't admitted that he had been paid and purchased this item from him. So then, this guy would have handed over him and the chamor that he's talking about over to the terminator. So what's your friend? Yes, of course. Yes, you bought it. Yes, sir. Okay, yeah, sure, sure. Witnesses, he bought it. It's all his fair and square. He made me a deal I couldn't refuse.
So, he's a Goslin. Is that a profession?
We're going to talk about what defines him as a Goslin, whether it's a profession or whether it's a
car.
I mean, no. It's the Gemara's next question. It's not a trivial question. What am I going to say? Just because a person was once stole something, so therefore it doesn't have chazaka on anything, and no, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. So the Gemara indeed has to define that, and we're going to get into that in a minute. Now, this is really not a very, very clear Gemara at all, and that because of it, Tosfos actually has different gerzos, suggests that there's no way this gerza can work out, because Lamaisa, if we have witnesses, we don't need anything else. What do you mean, maybe he's saying the truth? He doesn't have to say anything. Not only that, what do we need a chazaka for? Somebody's bringing witnesses that the Baal Din is Meida, that this belonged to his father, and we know him to be a Yoresh. This has nothing to do with chazaka. Either there's a reason for us not to trust the witnesses or not. I mean, but then that's all you got to say. Just say that a Goslin, we don't trust witnesses. That's all. So therefore, he says this, the whole Gemara does not seem to make any sense at all as we have it. Okay, but the Rashbam accepts it on face value. And Omar Rava Pa'amim Shafilu Ben Benosho Gazla Nami Eno Chazaka. There are times in which the grandson would also not have a Chazaka. Hechidami Kegon De Ka'ati B'Ta'anata Da Abba. That's where he would be coming along and would have the Taina of Abba De Avu. So he would be saying, basically, well, I know that I inherited this from my father, and my father told me that the way he has it is he got it from his father, so it's been here for generations. Oh, that's great. But just like your grandfather would have been believed to have a taina, neither are you. Now, this is also problematic. It sounds, on the surface, almost trivial. But the truth is that a lokeach or a yoresh, remember, the reason that we allow him to keep on the basis of a chazaka is because taninan like. He says, I don't really know. Okay, so if you don't really know, it should be a chazaka she'ini matana. But we always say that the court should be telling lo, because how is he supposed to know? Now, just because he got it from his grandfather, supposedly, Lamaisa, as far as the Ta'anina, he knows nothing about this. His father got it, his grandfather got it. So if we would say Ta'anina, we should be telling that perhaps your father, who was not a Goslin, remember, perhaps your father bought it from the guy. But why should we not address the Ta'anina even without this? So even though the guy has no idea where it came from, we should automatically say Ta'anina Lena. In fact, Tosis changed the girsa because he says, why in the world wouldn't you have a chazaka if we're Ta'anina Leorish? I mean, we don't know. It's just as easy to say that this person bought it, right? Maybe if his father was alive. If his father was alive, his father wouldn't have said, the way I have it is from the grandfather. His father would have said, I bought it. So just because even if the grandfather were going to see, the Goslin, according to one approach, is that he had once been Goslin this very field. Even if that's true, that doesn't mean that that's the way that he got it. Maybe it was returned, and then they went out and bought it finally. So if Tanin Lelokeach, and Tanin Leyorish, we ought to be Tanin Leyim, because of that he suggests that maybe we should change the gears to say just the opposite. That the Ben Goslin himself would have a chazaka. Perhaps, and that may be that we, and that would be, even though it was once in his father's hands, nonetheless, it's possible to create a case where he has a chazaka, but he doesn't have a makor for changing the girsa like that. So he suggests that if we accept the girsa as it is, maybe the point is that something that's less likely, we won't be telling even for a yorish. I mean, we already know the history of this field. You're saying, but yeah, man, but it's still possible that. But the idea of Tanina Leorish is not, it's possible that. The Tanina Leorish is equally possible that. That's not the case over here. So maybe that's good for the Kiddush. We wouldn't say Tanina Leorish in this case. Now, our president asks, indeed, Hechi Dami, how exactly do we define a Goslin? Because in the same way that we said, how do we define a clothes cleaner? That was a big shaila. Do we define it as being his personal dry cleaner that he always uses? Do we need to have Aiden that he brought the suit into the dry cleaner? Are we going to actually say that any dry cleaner never has a chazaka on any suits? We have to raise the same question over here. It's certainly difficult to believe that once a person stole something in his life, so at that point he doesn't have a chazaka on anything anymore. That's even worse than the dry cleaner. So what would it mean? Echidami Gazlan. Omer Rabbi Yochanan. A gazlan would mean somebody. It means that there's a history of his attempting to get this field through illegal means.
One particular field.
The one that is right now being claimed that there's a chazaka. Now, we know that he returned the field. So it's not the fact that we think that this was the original gazlan. In other words, the courts got after him, and it was recovered. But nonetheless, having established himself as a gazlan on this field, now already we're not going to accept a chazaka. Because the same way he did it the first time, he might have done it the second time. It's just gotten more sophisticated.
On this field.
On this field. Doesn't mean we're going to say that on anything he doesn't have a chazaka. Rav Chista, who is not arguing in Rav Yochanan, just giving an alternative. Rav Chista says you could have a din of a ganav that is broader than that, if the issue of the ganav is not to establish how it got there, but rather to establish why someone would have agreed to give it to him. Because in the same way that we said, even if we have witnesses, we're not going to believe it. So then that would mean that we're saying, oh yeah, sure, he sold it to you all right, with a gun to his head. And therefore, we don't believe you. Once someone has established himself as being willing to kill for his monetary advancement, then we won't believe tainas that are based, because then we believe him to have simply terrorized people. Even if he didn't do anything, people would have been terrorized into doing whatever he wanted against their will. And therefore, says Rav Chista, go and debate Ploni. Notice I don't say the names. I'll send you a letter posthumously. But go and debate Ploni shehorgim nefashot al iskei mamon. So somebody's established himself at being willing to murder for mamon, like the railroads, you know, trying to buy up all the property in the right of way. I mean, yeah, obviously we're not going to accept the taina that it's all ours fair and square. And we'll see later on, this of course leads us directly into the next sugya. The next sugya is going to be the question of somebody forced to sell. Is that considered to be a kosher sale? The difference of whether forced to sell and being paid, or forced to sell not being paid, or being paid an unfair price, that's already a machloket we touched on earlier, briefly, on Teluva Bezavin. Well, we'll get there. Let's get there.
That's just forced to sell without being paid.
It's still a deal you can't refuse. Right? Still a deal you can't refuse. I mean, the truth, no, it's interesting. That's really very much, sounds funny, but that's very much part of the machlokas about the nature of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because that's essentially what happened. God made Paro a deal he can't refuse and calls that a pidyon. He was never paid. So where's the pidyon? And we take the pidyon, turn it into a pidyon. You know, Shepadaotano. Where's the Padaotano? I mean, you beat him up until he said, okay, I give in, right? So you could say you try to get around that by supporting him, and he won't give in until there's no choice in the matter, and then he chooses to give in. I mean, that may be, but where's the pidyon? I mean, apparently, a deal you can't refuse is considered to be a kosher sale. But Lamaisa, this, of course, was the tviyah after centuries that the Gemara records, that they demanded everything back. The mitzvah demanded everything back.
All the money back. Yeah,
and then the shaila was, okay, pay us for all the work, in which case the work would have been...
right. 3 million workers.
Yeah. Was they still not
easy. Yeah. Minimum wage, how much?
I don't know. Maybe that's what it would be saying. That Lamaise, you can't say it was that he wasn't paid. He was properly paid. But that has very much to do with this sugya, as we'll see in a moment. But first, let's just complete the din of... We've talked about various cases, sharecroppers, dry cleaners... Gazlonim, I mean, but how long does a person maintain that name? What if he's a retired dry cleaner? So is that it? No suits for the rest of his life or what? Tana Rabbanan, Anuman ein lo chazaka, but if he retires and Yarad mi umnuto is no longer osek, then he would have a chazaka. Same thing gets true about a sharecropper. Aris ein lo chazaka, but if he's Yarad mi arisuto, yesh lo chazaka. Whether this means he has a chazaka only on the things that he's claiming that he got ex post facto. Well, I wasn't the dry cleaner when I got this suit. Or, and I wasn't the sharecropper when I got this suit. Or whether it's even referring to things that he got as a sharecropper. He says it's been 10 years. So what do you think? That the guy didn't give it to me? He left it here. The point is, it's been so long. Normally, he would have asked for his stuff back if he didn't ask for his stuff back. So then we'll say, okay, it's not reasonable to say that he just walked off with it because he was once a sharecropper. It's not so unusual for somebody to say, you've worked so many years, just keep the old tools, you know? Like another guy.
Did he acquire it from Yair Shalom?
Yeah. No. What do you mean?
In other words, the owner...
No, there's no shinui. No, it's not Yeush.
No, but the owner gave up Pukavavavavavavavavavav?
No, you'd have to actually give it to him. Because otherwise, no, you could still take your thing back. You're not kind of with Yush once it gets into your Rishus while it belonged to the other guy. Okay, it says, could be either way.
And if he says, if he's not paying within 30 days, it will be sold.
You mean, is such a notice okay? That's a question, whether the person that walked in signed off on that notice. Notice that notice. Yes, yes. If it would be a takana of the tzibur, yeah, for sure. But that's the question. I mean, if he takes a ticket that says that and accepts the ticket as the proof of the thing, maybe that's enough. Okay, now we said earlier, ben against a father against a ben does not have a chazaka, but a ben shechalak, I mean, once he split from the father, and now he's got his own life, his own business, and it's no longer Joe and son, or maybe it's son and Joe, but whatever has happened, it's a separation. Yeah, it's a separation in terms of my parnasa and my life, and I'm out of the house. Now he has a chazaka. A woman and a husband don't have a chazaka, we said, but after they get divorced, they do. So an ish and it garsha, I mean, that's sort of obvious, isn't it? So Bishlema ben Shechalak. I mean, I said that. The father's very happy. The son went out, got married, got his own parnasa. I mean, they're not angry at each other. So I understand there's a chiddush there, because Yitzchak, I mean, I might have thought that the same way that if they're living in the same business, in the same home, he would have been Michael. Maybe a father's not makbid on a son. Let him stay there for 3 years. They didn't give him a kamashman. That's a big chiddush. That lamaisa, father doesn't want to be mevater the balut. And he certainly would have seen to it that there was a mecha'a in the event that he didn't want him to keep it. But what is the chiddush? Isha shenit garsha. I mean, obviously, they're divorced. I mean, why would we assume that there's some love lost between them over here? I mean, of course he's not going to want her to be taking his field or... He would have been mocha, he would have been even more mocha. Right? So, answers the Gemara, you know, you're right about that. The case would have to be where he divorced her, but it was a case, let's say, of Suffolk or of Lo. So they're basically still in bed together, so to speak, because he hasn't really given a get that's going to potter her. So now it's a Suffolk Gerushin. Now the din is, as Rabbi Zera says, Rabbi Zera, the Amar Rabbi Zera, Amr Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amr Shmuel Kol makom Shamru chachamim Begureshet Ve'inam Begureshet Ba'alach Hayav B'mezonoteah. He has to continue supporting her, because he has to first prove that she's divorced and then she's free on her own with the ketubah and so on and so forth. Right now he's going to say, okay, we'll leave you in limbo for the next 50 years. I mean, he has to continue to support her. So you might think, if he was going to continue to support her, so Mamela, okay, so he let her use the field already and just take what it is that she needs for Parnassah. Kamash Malan, he's not going to give her any kind of thing that makes life easier on her. He wants her to have to go to court every other day and drive her crazy, which is what is standard in these kind of situations. And therefore, we do not really think that he wanted to make things easier on her. And so, Mamela, he certainly would have protested. What are you doing here? I thought I'd seen the end of you. And since he doesn't, it must be that she really purchased it from him. Omer of Nachman. Getting back now to the situation which a person is really pressured into a sale. So Rav Nachman said, Omar li Huna. Now, we're going to see later on, it's Rav Huna who actually holds that if taluhu v'zovin, then zvina zvina. So if somebody is hung up until he's ready to agree to a sale, and he agrees to the sale, and he's paid for the sale, then Rav Huna says it's a kosher sale. The truth is that not everybody agrees to that. So it may be that even if he was paid for the sale, it wouldn't be a good sale. However, when Rav Nachman speaks over here about what Rav Huna said to him, he extends it, according to Rabibi, beyond what Rav Huna himself holds. So let's not get confused with that. Because he's going to say that even if the guy was paid, it wouldn't make any difference if he was forced into a sale. But Rav Huna himself really later on makes it clear that if he's paid, then it's okay. So Rav Nachman says, look, what I was told by my friend Huna is that kulam sheviu raya, rayatan raya, umamidin sadeh biyadam. All of the cases that we spoke about before, the aris, the dry cleaner, whatever it is, if they bring proof, so then it's perfectly good proof, which is a trivial statement. I mean, obviously, you know, to bring witnesses, why wouldn't it be? But this is the important part of the statement. However, the one special case is the case of the gazlan. Because a gazlan, even if he brings witnesses that say that he purchased it and the guy admitted that he purchased it and so on, as we said before, ein raya to raya, it's not a good proof in terms of what? That ein ma'amidin sadeh biyado. He doesn't get to keep the field. And that doesn't mean he doesn't get his money back if there was actually money exchanged. we're going to see later, which of course Rav Huna would not have agreed to, because Rav Huna, if money was exchanged, would have said he does get to keep the field. Okay, but that part we'll see later on. Says the Gemara, now, is there a chiddush in that? My kamash want to answer before the Mishnah. The Mishnah is lakach misikri kon. So these were the carpetbaggers that had come in after the Roman conquest. And they were going around buying up things and so on. And there were three stages that the Gemara there clarifies, the Braita. Three stages of the carpetbaggers. First, they could do whatever the heck they wanted. They could kill and, you know, take a bounty. Then the last stage was the government actually would protect people against these type of forced sales. But not when the government is in Washington. In other words, if the nearest government center is Rome, you sell. Worry about it later. That's what we're talking about now in different levels. So in the case where you expect to be able to get back your thing, and it's not a deal you can't refuse in the ultimate sense, there he's able to go and recover it. So, if lakach misikrikon, now over here, a Jew goes and buys a field off of one of these Romans that he knows bought it from a Jew, took it from a Jew, as the case may be. He goes to the real owner, and he knew it was so-and-so's field, and he buys it from that owner. Then, it says mikho batel. So why is mikho batel? Because the guy was afraid to say that, no, you can't have it, because he understands that the guy who took it is going to come back and shoot him. So the same way that he gave the guy the field and ran off, so too, he's not going to argue with the guy as long as he's got the gun. But if that's the case, it means that even if you have a raya, the raya is batel, because we understand that you did this only under the pressure of the murderous intents of the guy who took the field. So what's the difference if it's a Jew? But the fact is that if the Jew now goes back to the secret cone and says, look, I'm not going to buy this field from you because the owner says he doesn't want to release it. That's all he needs. So of course he agreed. But that's basically saying the same thing, that a goslin, because it's a deal you can't refuse, you don't have even a raya to. So then what's the chiddush? I'll tell you what the chiddush is. Reb Nachman wanted it made clear that Rav is wrong. Lafukim in a Rav. The Omar Rav said, now wait a minute, it depends what the situation was. If when he went to the original owner of the field, the Jew said to him, go take it, be machzik in it. So then, you're right. That doesn't prove anything. So Lashon HaDomrei Lechazeku Kni. But if he writes him a shtar, even though the secret could never have asked for a shtar, so this guy comes along and says, look, you know, I don't want to buy from this guy if you're against it. So if the guy says, me against it, go do whatever you want. So that doesn't mean anything. But if he writes him out a valid contract, nobody asked him to write out a valid contract, and therefore, in going that far, we don't believe that he did that out of fear. It must mean that Baruch Hashem, at least the Jew will get the property, but pay me something, and so on. That's what he did. He was lucky, right? He paid him. Okay, the Gemara there has a formula, how much it's worth, and things like that under these circumstances, but that's not our circuit. So comes along Reb Nachman to say, I say, he doesn't have a raya, any kind of raya. I don't care if it's a shtar. I don't care if it's Adim that said he said, no raya at all. So Komashban, that's good for what Reb Nachman's chiddush is. That actually Shmuel is right. Shmuel says, "Afreshtar nami lo kana." Even if he wrote out a shtar, he's just trying to get that secret going off his back. So he wants it very clear. Look, I have nothing to do with this. Okay, forget about it. Hello, you don't know me. I don't know you. Some other world. That's all that he's trying to do. The only thing that we would accept as an actual raya is if he writes achrayut nechasim. So over there, where he's guaranteeing the sale, I mean, that's crazy. What am I guaranteeing the sale? That if somebody comes and takes it from you, say, I'm going to pay you for something that somebody stole from me? That already is nonsense. I mean, that even the fear of the secret kin isn't mechayivim to do that. So that would be already considered to be a proof that he really was nechale. Now, Rav Bibi ended this discussion, Mishmei de Rav Nachman, because it could not have been what Rav Nachman was saying in terms of Rav Huna. For the simple reason, according to Rav Huna, if money exchanged hands, then even if we know that he was pressured to sell, it's still considered to be a sale. But Rav Bibi claimed that's Rav Huna's opinion. But Lamaisa, I'm telling you, that Rav Nachman himself said, Mishmei de Rav Nachman, not Mishmei de Rav Huna. Rav Nachman himself said that when we said before that, remember the words that we said, we said that ein rayato raya ve'ein mamidin sadeh biyado. We don't let him keep the field. Now, the whole point of that statement, we don't let him keep the field. Well, obviously, ve'ein rayato raya, we don't let him keep the field. So it must be saying ein rayato raya vis-a-vis the field, but he still gets his money back. So in other words, if he paid for the field, it's true he can't force us to keep the field because the guy who sold him the field didn't want to sell him the field despite the fact that he paid for it. But we're not going to institute a knas or claim that the guy is lying about the money because we see we're talking about a case where we have witnesses that he actually counted out the money in front of them. So in that case, ma'ot yeshlo. I mean, when do I say ma'ot yeshlo? Not where we have witnesses who say, the guy admitted that he was fully paid. Right. Of course the guy admitted he was fully paid for the same reason that he wrote the shtar. That doesn't prove anything. So, we saw him take out from his carpet bag cash, and he counted it out. He didn't say here. He counted it out, and this is what he paid him, and we saw it ourselves. So there's no question he was paid. And for all that he has as witnesses, the guy says, wait a minute, take the field away from me. I paid cold cash for this field. The witnesses that say that he admitted in front of them that I paid cold cash. That admission is useless, as we said in Amud Aleph. Kidder of Kahana, the armor of Kahana. He loved the Odile, had he not been Moida that he had gotten the cash. So then Avi Mampim Lididei Ulacham Re Lashachvar. He simply would have given him and everything he's got over to the Terminator. I mean, the government's very happy to hear that somebody hasn't paid his taxes for the past 40 years. They'll take care of it. So Mamela, he goes ahead. So that is Reb Nachman's. Now Reb Huna disagrees, because Omer Reb Huna, the fact is, if Talyuv is Avin, if the guy was hung up until he agreed to sell. And by the way, there's another girsa, which is the girsa Teluhu, that is to say, a lashon of a command, right? So Teluhu means that the guy was under threat. Somebody said, okay, hang him up, boys. We just got to wait for a couple of days. All right, just take the field. So that's the question. I mean, he wasn't hung up, but it's the threat that works on its own. We don't need for him to actually be hanging, according to that girsa. So now, if they say to Lov, Zavin, Zvine, Zvine, I say, says Ravuna, if Lamai say he sold and he was paid, so then that's a perfectly kosher sale, because you think about it. I mean, somebody is desperate for cash. He sells his house that he's invested half his life in. You're telling me that he wasn't hung up? Well, basically, he was hung up. He had no choice. The guy's dying not to sell the house. So he should come back when he wins the lottery the next week and say, I only sold because I was desperate for cash, but I didn't really want to sell. So give me back my money. Give me back my house. I'll give you back the money. You can't do that. So every sale, I mean, contains an element of coercion in it. Why should I give away something that I already have? I mean, unless obviously it's your business, but if some person sells something of his own, we always assume that he's coerced by circumstances. So what's the difference if you're coerced by circumstances or if this guy's gun is the circumstance? You know, all kinds of stuff happens in life. So you sold. So why isn't that a good sale? Kol demaz v'nidish, anything that a man sells, ilav the anis, if there wouldn't be some element of coercion, lo avi mazbin, why would he sell it? And nonetheless, well, we'll talk about that. We still state that it's a perfectly valid sale. Says the Gemara, as Scotcha said, what's the comparison? The Dilma, Sharni Unse de Navshe, Mi Unse de Achrine. I mean, isn't it an obvious difference between a case where you come to the conclusion that this is what needs to be done, and your mind has not been effectively taken over by someone else? So that is your choice. We already saw this, the Gabi, the Dinim of someone who murders. Right? So the difference between the vampire and the murderer. The vampire who needs to survive by drinking all your blood and you die, he's chayev. Not because of prejudice against vampires, but because it was his choice. Moshe Einkein, a guy who's got a gun to his head and kills you in order to avoid being killed, is not chayev. What? It is murder, but it's not my murder. I murdered a guy to save my life. You can call the legal terms whatever you want, but it's not my action, whatever it is. And that's considered to be onus. So that is a fundamental distinction. The word onus doesn't mean that we analyzed how much pressure you were under. You know, you have to recognize that this is your choice in life, pressure or no pressure. The meaning of onus is that you had no choice. That's the point. So if somebody else has taken over your choice, your thought processes, which is the case over here, that's something else. So how can you compare the cases of where a person's under pressure to sell? I mean, it's self-generated pressure, self-generated choices. So there is surely an afkamina between unzid and afshim, unzid achrine. Ela, what then would be the proof to Ravuna's assumption that Taluv is avi? must be Midatanya, famous case of the contradiction in the pasuk that says, Yakriva, here it says, the guy was by himself to bring carbon oil. Huh? So it says, El Petach Olamoid Yakriv Oto. Yakriv Oto doesn't make any sense. It should have said Yakrivenu, like I said earlier in the pasuk. Yakriv Oto means drag him in, kicking and screaming. Bring him in. It's going to be done one way or the other, meaning that the Besdin will drag him in, kicking and screaming, to bring a carbon. So that means he could be forced to bring a carbon. Continues the pasuk, of course, liritzono, lifnei Hashem. Now, how exactly did it turn out into being liritzono if he's screaming and yelling, I don't want to do this? So yochol ba'al kocho, you might think when it says that kofinoto, that when you force him, it means you force him against his will. Talmud lomar liritzono. No, of course not. We would never force someone against his will. So how do you explain that contradiction? That means we just keep beating him until he says, I want. So that means that must be his will. So you see from there that if you get a person to agree, even though he is clearly being forced to agree, he agrees because he certainly doesn't want this kind of thing going on. So that's considered to be an agreement. Says Gemara, no, wait a minute. If that's the case, so then it may well be that he's getting something very useful in exchange. I mean, Dilma, Shani Atman Nekle Tatavile Kapara, I mean, he wants a Kapara. So deep down, he wants the Kapara, but he doesn't want to pay. Okay, so we'll force him because he's getting something out of it. But, I mean, in this case, he wants his field, and you're forcing him to sell. Why would he want that? The Tosfos asks a fascinating question. If the case would be that we're learning out of the Teluv Ezovin, out of the case of Kofinoto, Achyoma Rotsani, then you shouldn't even need to pay him. Because before we got to the idea that it's a kapara, right? We said he's not getting anything out of it. He's being forced into it. So then, if that's the case, if I force somebody into giving me a gift, why do I have to force him? Ravuna agrees. If you force him into giving it as a gift, then it's not chal. But if it's taluv ezavin and he gets money, so it was a lakicha, then he did. And he tries to bring a raya from a case where he doesn't get anything out of it. At least an av, I mean, right? So what were we thinking? I mean, this couldn't possibly be the model for Ravuna's din, because it doesn't provide for the distinctions that Ravuna is making between the Talua of Ezovin or the Talua of Notin Matana. So Tosfos brings that the Ri tried to answer by saying that we understood all along that, of course, he was getting something in return. That was for sure. This case, or a case where you're going to force a guy to give a get. I mean, obviously, there's advantages to him in bringing the carbon. There's advantages to him in getting rid of a wife that he has to support, whatever the case may be. But those advantages we understood as being generic advantages similar to the money that you're going to be paid. Now the Gemara is saying, but, I mean, might this not be a special case? Maybe an exchange is not sufficient. Ravuna is saying an exchange is sufficient. An exchange is not sufficient. But kapara, I mean, okay, that's something, you know, people are desperate for deep down. They don't want to burn in hell. They figure this way, you know, at least let the church have the money. I mean, so, but people do that. So that may be special, no? Well, you're right. Okay, this could not indeed be the proof. But if you continue on there, then it becomes the proof, because the same thing is true with Gitei Nashim. If it's true with Gitei Nashim, then you certainly... When you say, oh, it's a kapora, but, I mean, being married to her is the kapora, not not getting rid of her, right? So over there, what would be specific about that? I mean, over there, what we're saying is that you're saving money, basically, right? In other words, Gitei Nashim, the advantage to you is not anything that's unique. The advantage is you don't owe her anymore the support that you would owe her before. That's the equivalent of the sale of the field. So maybe that is Ravuna's raya. Now, Tosfos says the Ri's pshat ain't no good. Because if he's right, then it should make absolutely no difference whether the get is being forced by a Beit Din of Yisrael correctly, or a get is forced by having a gun to your head. Because if you're saying ultimately, okay, I agree because I'm getting something, it's worth it for me on some level, so then how in the world would you possibly make a distinction between the two? Tell her we're almost ready to start in another 10 minutes. So that's very strange. Okay, So therefore, the Reese switched out, and he said, okay, maybe the idea is doing something that you got to do, you know, doing something that you got to do, that you recognize you got to do. This is the law. I got to do it. That would be, by definition, the equivalent of mecher. But to get me to do something that I don't got to do, that far, I wouldn't compare it to mecher. Maybe that's the pshat. Maybe you understand we're dealing with some subtle issues over here. So by Gitei Noshim, we say, Kofin oto achi omar rotzani. And again, the Gemara says, but maybe the very fact that you're doing what you got to do is the issue. Because Dilma Shani Atam, the mitzvah lishmoa divrei chachamim. I mean, for a person to do something that is right to do, morally. So as the Rambam explains, over there, the truth is that a person wants to do what's right morally. Now, there's a lot in him that resists the moral impulse, but the moral impulse is there. So if all we do is we remove the things that prevent the moral impulse from being responded to, and that's what we're doing over here, we're beating you up. And suddenly morality seems a lot more enticing, you know. So maybe that's the point. But if something is not moral, the sale, I mean, it's nothing to do with my morality. If there's no inner nekuda that you can attach it to, then there's no ratzon, because will is ultimately the expression of my inner self. And if the will isn't there, you can't say that the going along is the equivalent of will. So it makes a tremendous difference. You see, we've had a number of fascinating issues about defining what ones is and what rotzon is over here. Right? That's the way the Rambam Paskins is this nekuda. So therefore, we do not have any source for Rav Huna that we know of that we can use as a model. Says the Gemara, you're right. The truth is that Rav Huna holds that it's a svara, that agav unse gomar umakne, the idea of making up your mind about something where anyway you're being forced to do it, the psychology is that the person ultimately lets go. It's not worth the fight. I don't want to deal with this anymore. Let me just get it over with. So that wanting to get it over with is an inner drive. And I let go of it, and I'm gomer. I finished. I just finished with it. And this is very, very simple. It's actually a biological response like that, which you notice when you see an animal in the teeth of a lion or something. There's no struggle. I mean, there's a reason for that. There's a sudden release of serotonin and so on and so forth. But that means that there is an impulse that's provided, evolutionary impulse that's provided, that it's not worth struggling when it's over.
Surrender.
And that's gomer. So he's gomer. And that's the point that enochinamitain is ravuna. That is a natural sfora. I don't need a place to prove that. Because I'm not dealing with the legalities over here. I'm dealing with the concept of the kinyan. And I'm saying, model that on the fact that the general sense of buying and selling is anyway not an expression of a person's inner desire. It's his acquiescence to realities. I need money. It's a reality. It's irrelevant whether it's his choice or somebody else's. It becomes a reality. The lion's got his teeth in you. That's a reality. I'm not going to fight it. So the male, according to Rav Huna, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter that one comes from within and one comes from without. What matters is the Geimer Das, and Geimer Das is the nature of Kinyonim always. That is called Gemiras Das, Legabe Kinyonim. It's not called Ratzon, Legabe other issues, such as the Chiyev for murder. Then it's not Ratzon. But he's saying there's a difference between Gemiras Das for Kinyonim and ultimate will. We didn't realize that there was that difference. And that's why we kept trying to, yeah, but I mean, you can't, something that is a moral imperative does not, is not the same as something that's not a moral imperative. It won't draw your inner commitment. Says Rav Huna, I'm not looking for inner commitments. I don't believe that buying and selling is part of inner commitments. I believe that buying and selling is part of decision processes that people make. It's not choices. It's just decisions that are made on the basis of the reality of life's pressures. So why can't a gun to your head be one of life's pressure? Fascinating, fascinating approach.
Sounds like the famous joke about the two happiest days in a boat owner's life.
The what?
It's like the famous joke about the two happiest days in a boat owner's life. The day he buys a boat and the day he sells his boat.
No, they're real in there. There really is. It's very inner. Okay, time for our quick review here. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Oman ain't lo chazaka. Ben Oman yesh lo chazaka. Aris ain't lo chazaka. Ben Aris yesh lo chazaka. But Gazlan, even a Ben Gazlan ain't lam chazaka. But a Ben Benoshel Gazlan yesh lo chazaka. So now hechidam. Ida atu betani to the avuhan. So afilo anach nami lo. Vida lo atu betana da avuhan elo betanel to the nafshayu. Afilo Ben Gazlan nami. Lo tzricha de ka amri edim befaneinu hodalo. So hanach tikala mema kushta ka amri ahar afagav de odni. Bas har afagav de odni nami. Lo mehem en kriv kana. Di om rev kana ilav de odni lehi avi mati lehi ulach amri lashachvar. Omar rova. Pa'amim shafilu ben beno shal gazla nami en lo chazaka hechidami. Kegon de ka'ati beta'anata de abba de avu. Hechidami gazlan. Om rev yochanan. Well, for instance, if kugulon. Rav Chista says, why not just give the broad case? Kegon de bayit ploni. Shorgin de fashot al iskei mamon. Tana rabbanan, oman en lo chazaka, but if yarad mi umnato, yesh lo chazaka. Aris en lo chazaka, but yarad mi arisato, yesh lo chazaka. Ben shechalak, or nisha shedit karsha, or nisha kol adam. So basically, ben shechalak is a chiddush, a mitzrech. Salka tait ramina, ahova, chuli achu, ema, chuli achu gabe. Kamash Brondalo, but Ishashinit Garsha, Pshita. Lotzrich Abimagureshit Venamagureshit, so it's a suffix. And Rabbi Zera, Paskin, Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Rabbi Mishmuel, Koma Kom Shamrucha Hamimagureshit Venamagureshit, Baala Chayavu Mizonotea. So you might have thought that he let her be in this field. Kamash Brondalo certainly would have been Mocha. Omrev Nachman, Amarli Huna, Kulam Shiviu Raya, Raya Tom Raya, Umamidim sade biyadan, except the gazlan. The gazlan shevi raya, ain raya to raya. And ain mamidim sade biyadan. Maka mashlan is a fairish mishnah. Lakach besikrikon vechazav lakach mi balabayit mikho batel. Ah, but the Kiddush is life of giving a rab. The Omer Rav Loshana, the Omer Lech Chazeku Kne. But suppose he wrote him out of shtar, he would be kena. The kamash one that I disagree. And I would like Shmuel. The Omer Av Pishtar nami lo kana. Rav Bibi Messiah, not as part of the statement of Ravuna, but as Mishmeda Rav Nachman himself, that although in Ma'amidin Sadeh B'yado, that just means Karka Inlo, but he gets his money back, Avo Ma'ot Yeshlo, Ba'medvar Ma'murim, Sha'amru Eidim B'faneinu Manalo, so we know that he was paid. Avo Amru Eidim B'faneinu Hodalo, that doesn't mean anything to us, Kirav Kana. The Om Rav Kana, he loved the Odi, lay avim amti, lay lide lechamre, leshachvar. Om Rav Huna, telu vizavin, zvin azvune. My timer. Because anyway, called the mazvin, inish loved the anish lo avim azvin, vafil ochis vine zulvine. Yeah, but, I mean, if we're talking about a person's will, surely, shani unzu de nafshe, mi unzu de achrina, well, ela, I mean, tanya, yakriva to malamichikofinoto. Yacho bal kocho? Nah, no way. Talmud lomar liritzono? Okay, it's that kofinato, but I mean, atshuma rotzani. Yeah, but that's shani atam denech le davile kapara. You can't make a rule out of that. The show an inner will for sell. Yeah, let me say, v'chinato mer begitei nashim, kofinato atshuma rotzani. Yeah, but that's because there's a moral imperative. Dilma shani atam de mitzvah l'shmoa divrei chachamim. Rav Huna is saying something completely different, says the Gemara. Ela svorahu, that agav unse gomar umakna, we're not talking about any inner wills at all.